The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you feel that despite what the Bible says about prophecy, about God giving the promised land to the ancient Israelites, known today as the Jews, that Israel, modern-day Israel, present-day Israel, today is in the wrong, that they simply stole that land from its true inhabitants, the poor, innocent, helpless, indigenous Palestinians. Well, my friend, the people who are in the wrong today are the ones who peddle such nonsense, and now let me introduce a man who never peddles anything other than perhaps a bicycle, rotating host, and good friend, Jim Barrier.
Hey, Bob. Yep. And it's just like falling off a bike.
Do you still have a bike? Do you?
I have a stationary bike.
Oh, you use one to work on. Okay, very good.
It's too hot in Texas to go out riding a bike.
Yeah, I've been there. I believe you. Yeah.
Don't do that. So, you know, I read The Holocaust Against Israel, your newest book, or at least one of your newest books.
Oh, that is the newest one, yeah.
That is the newest, hot off the press.
In fact, it's only been out about 2 weeks, yeah.
Well, I'll have to admit, I did the Amazon Kindle version.
Okay.
So I could do it quickly. I had to cram because I wanted to read that book before we did this show. I have to say, first of all, for the listeners as well, this is an excellent piece of work. You did your homework. You know your history. You gave an unbiased presentation because there's so much, as you said in your introduction, so much prejudice and slant and propaganda out there on so many sides, and I really appreciated your take on this thing. And I'm just going to give one more plug. I think we should try to get this book placed in the bookstore at the Holocaust Memorial in Washington, D.C. They have quite an array of books dealing with the subject. I don't know if it would be too controversial for them, but we ought to at least try.
Well, first of all, thank you. You're somebody whose opinion I respect, so I'm honored. It was the most difficult book I've ever written, Jim. I actually wrote a 12-part series about Israel for my website that's been on for years and years. Lately, I had decided to start alternating between my fiction series and getting some nonfiction published. I thought this would be a piece of cake, and then I realized, particularly with all I've studied about Islam, that there's just a lot more facts that have been at my disposal. So I ended up rewriting the whole thing, constantly freaking out over the accuracy. In fact, I'm glad you got the Kindle version because there were a couple of points in the print version which I thought needed to be better clarified, and they are clarified with a few footnotes that are in the Kindle version, not in the print one. We'll get it in the print one eventually too, but I didn't want to pull it down right after it got on the press. So you actually read the real director's cut, the Kindle version.
Well, and that's awesome. I'll not know the difference unless I pick up a copy of the one with real paper. And normally, I'm an old school guy. I like to read books that have pages. I still use a dictionary and a concordance and things like that. That are lost. Lost arts.
I'm with you. I'm much more excited every time I see a print copy sell than a Kindle. I mean, we do Kindle and Nook to stay in the 21st century, But I really, yes, I don't own a Kindle. I'm much more excited about the print copies.
Well, it was a matter of convenience for me at this point. But anyway, excellent work, and I think we're going to play off of that tonight, hopefully. I have some questions or just some things to kind of toss out there that were stimulated in my mind.
Yeah,
as a result of
you bet.
So, but let me share a couple of things and while we've got our first segment here. I not long ago saw a book, a hardcover book, a coffee table book, and it was the 100 most important people in history. And I thought, well, let me just see.
Oh, are you? I'm guessing, did they have Yasser Arafat in there? Is
no,
that
no,
where you're going
like
with this?
Historically, in all of history, and I just looked at like the top ones, and the number two most important in history, according to this book, was Jesus of Nazareth. I thought, well, that's good. I'm glad that he made the All-Star team.
Well, who was number one if Jesus was two?
Muhammad.
Oh, you're kidding me. Oh my
and
God.
Here was their reasoning.
Yeah.
And they said, well, Jesus was just a religious leader, which isn't true either. And Muhammad was both a religious leader and a political leader. Therefore, he had a greater impact.
Well, you know what? I would have put Muhammad on the bottom, but let's at least give them a stroke for accuracy, because you don't often hear people admit today that Islam is both a religious and a political ideology. Which is where
exactly.
We get the jihad, which is where we get the Sharia.
Yeah. And I thought it was a good point, but then I thought, and you know how I think, I thought, wait a minute, if Muhammad's number one and Jesus is number two, then in reality, Abraham should be the most important person in human history, because without him, there's no Jesus, there's no Muhammad,
yeah.
There's no Moses, there's no David, no Solomon, right?
Exactly. This is reminding me of the very first episode or one of the early episodes of The Office. Did you ever watch The Office?
No, I'm familiar with it, though.
With the character Michael
I'm
Scott.
Right,
I liked it because I hate reality shows and it's a satire of reality shows. But the character played by Steve Carell, I think his name's Michael Scott was in the series, but he's talking to the camera about his favorite people. And he says, number one would be Abraham Lincoln, number two would be Bono, and then he says, God, I think, would be number three. It was just kind of funny.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but you know, realistically, if you're going to factor in all of those things, I think we got to put Uncle Abe right up on top. And so that's my take on it, and I'm looking directly into the camera as I speak.
There you go.
That's Uncle Abe as an Abram, not Abraham Lincoln. Okay.
Yes. Abraham. Yes.
Yeah. And then I want to hit one more thing, just and then we can maybe get a little more serious. But I have seen, you've seen it, it's the stupidest bumper sticker in the history of stupid bumpers. And it says coexist, and it's spelled out with religious symbols. It's got a crescent moon, and it's got a cross, and a Star of David, and a yin-yang Taoism, you know, thing, and a peace symbol. Have you seen that bumper sticker?
Yes, I have seen that.
It's the stupidest bumper sticker anyone could put on their car and advertise that they're stupid by wearing this bumper sticker on their car, because anyone that knows just a little bit about those religions understands there is no coexistence, there is no peace. You have, in some of these groups are committed to annihilating the other groups.
Or even if we as Christians, of course, are not committed to annihilating other groups, but we can coexist in the sense of saying anybody that lives in America has a First Amendment and religious liberty. But we can't coexist in the sense of saying Jesus and Muhammad and Buddha are all teaching the same thing, because they were not teaching the same thing. I think you and I did a show about this a while back where we talked about how when somebody says all religions are right, they're really saying all religions are wrong, because they're not really taking any of the religions seriously, and they're assuming that all religions are made up. So if we're just making stuff up, one isn't any better than the other. But the founders of these religions did not claim they were making things up. They claimed they were getting revelation from God. They claimed it was true. And yet, they are truth claims that contradict themselves. They can't all be true.
That's the whole point. And, you know, even in Christianity, we have, and I use that term loosely, but Christianity is not without its atrocities. You know, we had, you know, the Inquisition, the Crusades and things. And so there have been things done in the name of Christianity. I don't think that they are things that Jesus would have endorsed, or even the apostles, or first century, or church fathers, probably up until the time of Constantine. And so when the world looks at the religions, they say, well, you're all guilty of that. And personally, I think, by the way, those kind of things are could come under the covering of taking God's name in vain. When you do something that's atrocious and then put his name on it to try to justify it. So, but that's another subject for another
Right, show. But I always like to point out that the difference between the Christians and the Muslims in the Crusades is that when Christians went out and did these atrocities, they were doing them in disobedience to Jesus. Muslims were conquering in obedience to Muhammad, and that's a very important difference.
Yeah, and that's a good point that needs to be clarified. But, you know, from my view of things and my understanding of history and the current world situation right up to this day, there's not going to be coexistence with these factions simply because of what you said, that some of them really believe that there is a mandate from their God, call it jihad or whatever you want to call it, and they will not coexist. And we may get into this, and, you know, you mentioned in the book that there are voices that are committed to wiping Israel off the map, eliminating them as though they are a plague on the planet. And I'm way, way ahead of my notes here, but that's the problem with that bumper sticker. So whenever I see that bumper sticker, my first reaction is, that's stupid. And then my second reaction is, I wonder if that person is a Christian.
Well, you know, I meet a lot of Christians that talk about that kind of universalism. Okay, we'll be right back with Jim Barrier.
Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I will not be with you next week. Speaking of Israel, I will be in Israel as a teaching tour guide, one of several teaching tour guides on the team. We fly out to Denver tomorrow morning, my lovely wife and I, where we will meet with the team of people joining us. And then on Tuesday morning, we fly from Denver to Israel, where Dana and I will be until July 7th. Of course, the Bob Siegel Show will still be on next week. We will be airing a repeat. And I will be back with you 2 weeks from today to conclude this series that we've been doing for several weeks on Israel, and perhaps to also share a few adventures about my trip. Please, those of you out there who pray, lift us up on this trip. Israel, as you know, is not the safest place to be. Although these days, no place is really safe. Thankfully, we serve a God who can keep us safe. The last time I went to Israel, which was my first time in Israel in 2008, I never felt safer, even though they were firing missiles every day from Gaza into Israel, only about 50 miles from where I was. Never felt safer in my life. Say hello again to Jim Barrier.
Hey, and when did you land under sniper fire, or was that somebody else?
No, that was Hillary that landed under sniper
fire. Yes. Sorry, I just had to throw that in there. And did we get a little tiny teasing taste of Billy Joel there? Was that
very good? That was a Billy Joel from, I love interludes and bridges and songs. Yeah, so that was from Piano Man, the part where you're actually hearing him play the piano.
And, exactly.
Which I love that song. It's a brilliant song. It's a song that evokes a lot of pathos. I love the song Piano Man.
Yeah, he's a great musician, great songwriter, and he has a very interesting life. And how appropriate that you're going to be in Israel, and then you come back and kind of wrap things up with up-to-date, firsthand report.
It is very appropriate, and I did get we sent a free complimentary copy of my new book to everybody who's going on the tour. So hopefully they've had a chance to read it by now. My wife's a little bit concerned about them bringing that book through security with that cover, the Holocaust against Israel. Yeah. They might think we're people calling for the Holocaust. Although actually, usually when the word Holocaust is used related to Israel, it's with sympathy to the way the Jews have been treated. An anti-Israel book would be more likely to say the Zionist plot or something like that. So I'm not sure it would be a problem, but we're at least encouraging people to use discretion. So hopefully they're reading that thing, because that'll be part of my teaching, that they'll have something, a context they could have studied, and they can bounce questions off of that.
I recommend the Kindle version then. So,
oh, that's true. I didn't think of that. Well, we should have sent them the Kindle. Well, now that we're for a couple of guys that don't like Kindle, we're sure giving a lot of advantages to the Kindle version today.
I have an iPad Mini, and it works on that. So, you know, any electronic device, you can do it. You could put it on your phone, but it'd be really tiny print. You know, you just touched on something, and it's one of the things I wanted to mention. You mentioned in the book, in the aftermath of the Holocaust, there was kind of a sympathy for Israel.
That is correct. It was very short-lived, but it did exist once upon a time.
And when I read that, I thought, you know, I have thought for a long time a similar thing that parallels that. And this is a little off-topic, but I just think it's something to consider. I have felt as a white, middle-class American kind of that I have been force-fed this collective social conscience to feel guilty about slavery in America. And I think there's a similar thing there, that we get these things, we feel bad about what happened. Slavery was wrong. And you've talked about that, you know, and some of the preachers were bold enough to preach against it back in those days. And of course, you had the abolitionists, the Underground Railroad and everything. But there was a similar thing that I think we could relate to right now. And unfortunately, the sympathy for Israel seems to have been waning in recent history, and some of that is the new propaganda, and it is the spin, and a particular slant that the media has. I think it's best if an individual will do their own homework, do some research, read The Holocaust Against Israel, read other books. You know, here's a book that people could read. Read the book The Hiding Place by Corrie Ten Boom.
Yeah, very courageous woman who hid Jews in Holland and then ended up going to a concentration camp herself rather than turn them over to the Nazis.
Yeah, and I mean, it's real, and we will hopefully sometime tonight talk about the efforts to even revise history and say, well, it never happened. I find that incredible. But then I realize we've been rewriting history and rewriting the Constitution and changing everything to fit, I say our culture, our society, to fit what makes us comfortable.
Well, we have, and one of the things, and we brought this out in the book, one of the spins is that the United Nations felt so sorry for Israel because of the Holocaust that they gave the Jews a land of their own, but in doing so, they stole the land from somebody else. And instead of admitting the historical ties that Jews have had to that land for thousands of years. So it may be true that had it not been for the Holocaust, the United Nations would not have been guilted into legally letting the Jews return to their land. But it's not true that the Jews didn't have a right to that land anyway, Holocaust or no Holocaust, because it was their land.
And it's ludicrous. And I've heard people say things like this. Well, they stole it from the Palestinians. Excuse me.
There was nobody there calling themselves Palestinian.
There were no Palestinians.
Except the Jews. The Jews were calling themselves Palestinians in those days.
Yes. And so it's just absurd. But I'll hear people say things, and it's because they read it or they heard it. It sounded good. They didn't do any research or any homework. And so they go around spouting off this stuff, and all it does is perpetuate the problem. And so I thank God for people like you that are take the risk of telling the truth and putting the word out there. We can't give up. I feel like we're fighting an uphill battle, but truth needs to be told. And sometimes truth is a hard pill to swallow.
And there aren't a lot of people telling the truth. One of the few people who I admire very much is Dennis Prager. I don't know if you ever catch his radio.
Yeah.
This came up on his show just a couple of days ago. They were talking about Germany and Angela Merkel. And the reason she has such open policies toward the Muslims is that Germany is feeling this guilt about the Holocaust. Well, okay, they should feel that guilt. But the ironic thing here is that a lot of these Muslims that they're letting into Germany hate Jews. So out of guilt for the Holocaust, they're bringing in more people who hate Jews.
At the potential of repeating history.
Yeah, it's got to be one of the greatest ironies you could point
out. That really is. That really, it's just crazy. But I think, and back to, we've mentioned this film a few times, but it's a mad
oh, world. I love it. One of my favorite movies of all time.
Me too. But surely the world seems to have gone mad at times when I can't even watch the news on TV, Bob.
Oh, I agree. Well, I'll flip it around, and oh my gosh, I can't take but a few minutes of some of these people. Okay, hold with me, my friend. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539. WNS Electric.
Is it really true that there will be peace in the Middle East if we just have a two-state solution? Or are some people instead challenging Israel's right to exist at all? Is it true that Jews have no historical claim to the Holy Land and stole that land from a people called the Palestinians? Bob Siegel's latest book challenges the historical revision of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and shows how Israel's struggle may soon be the struggle of the entire world. The Holocaust Against Israel by Bob Siegel, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
It's always an honor to be joined by pastor, co-host, and good friend Jim Barrier.
And that one was all too easy. Herb Alpert and Taste of Honey. And
his absolute best, the best of the Tijuana Brass.
Yeah, well, of course. And founder of A&M Records, A as in Alpert. So.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, he did actually found A&M Records, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. He made more money off of other people than he did his own music. Oh,
he had a lot going. Little piece of trivia. The very first time I performed a wedding, it was a couple that I met, led them to Christ at UC Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. The woman, her dad, was a doctor in Beverly Hills. All of his clientele were famous actors. And I performed their wedding in the backyard of a mansion in Beverly Hills. The yard was adjacent. The yard over the fence was Herb Albert's, from Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass. Never met him, but heard that that was his yard.
Well, he was iconic in my generation. I was more into the rock and roll scene, as you might imagine.
But yeah.
I heard that song so many times. You know, there, some songs just get burned into your brain. And so that one was that.
Well,
was
it's technically called jazz. There's a lot of different kinds of jazz, and I don't like all jazz. That's the kind of jazz that I do really like a lot.
Okay, the kind I like is, you know, your old school Milt Jackson.
Yeah, the improvisational jazz.
Yeah, where John Coltrane and those kind of
You
guys.
Must have liked anyway, the movie La La Land then, because that was a real tribute to jazz. Have you had a chance to see that yet?
That's the part that I liked about that film.
Yeah.
I really loved that the kid was committed to old school jazz, and I identified with that part of the film.
I'll bet that film goes a long way to bring jazz back, too.
I hope so. Now, back to the subject. We do this every month, Bob. We just get on these rabbit trails and run.
Well, that's the fun part about having you on. We talk about what's important, and then we stop and talk about what we feel like talking about.
Yeah, music and movies, you know. Okay, by the way, just my review. I loved Wonder Woman.
I liked it, too. I was never a fan, but the movie was not bad at all. Good acting, good character development, well-written dialogue.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. They crank out a superhero movie now once a month, it seems like.
Oh yeah, it's a cash cow for sure.
Yeah, but this one I really liked and good for DC, because I'm a DC guy, not a Marvel guy.
I'm with you. I was DC. I grew up on DC and not Marvel. Although I've liked the Marvel movies, loved both Guardians of the Galaxy. I like all the Spider-Man incarnations. But when I was growing up and reading comic books, I never read Marvel. It was all DC. Superman, Batman, the Legion of Superheroes from the 30th century were my favorites.
Yeah, those were...
Nick looks like he's never heard of the Legion of Superheroes. Have? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I
saw his eyebrows raise. I thought, is there a comic book Nick hasn't heard of? No, he turns out he has. That was my mistake.
All right. Now, where were we? We were somewhere in the Middle East.
Let's see. How do we segue? Was it Marvel or DC that did that comic book called The Israelis and the Palestinians? There's our segue.
Wow. Well, I know who I think the good guys are. So now let's move along a little bit. One of the things you talked about is, you know, why should we, that maybe we being Americans or even Christians, to be more direct, why should we support or should we support Israel? What are the reasons? Now, there's a very well-known pastor in my city who has lots of books, but I'm here to plug your books, not his books. And he's very well-known for being pro-Israel, and I think sometimes he takes a little bit of liberty. But let's talk about some of the reasons that it would be wise to support Israel. And even just setting aside, if you assume the notion that Israel is God's chosen people, and we do, I do, and that there is a relationship and a history that is unlike any other between the God of the Bible and the nation of Israel. But what are some other practical reasons why we ought to support?
Yeah, I think that's important. And you'll remember in the beginning of the book, I gave a disclaimer. I shared a story about a seminarian saying, I believe in Bible prophecy. I believe the second coming will take place in Israel. But it makes me feel obligated to take Israel's side, even when Israel's in the wrong. And I said to him, look, I believe in Bible prophecy, too. But there are actual historical human rights reasons to take Israel's side. And if we wanted to get into prophecy and that God's not done with Israel, that's all true. I get a little concerned when that ends up being the only reasons why Christians take Israel's side, because it makes me think, well, what if their theology changed? There is a theology that's very popular today called replacement theology, and I don't agree with replacement theology. It says that God's, the prophecies that were given to Israel are now going to be fulfilled in the church. I don't agree with that theology at all. I could prove from scripture that it's hogwash. But here's my point, Jim. Even if that were true, even if somebody wanted to sincerely follow replacement theology, that should not be saying jack diddly squat about what's going on in Israel today. We should still look at the human rights reasons, and we're dealing with two peoples, and one does not recognize the other's right to exist, and yet we're telling her to make deals with them, and that's the problem. It has nothing to do with prophecy, not really.
Yeah, and that's why I say if we set those things aside, because if you happen to be in a debate, which is when I first met you, and say you're debating an atheist group, or if you're on a college campus and you're talking to students, pulling the Bible prophecy thing isn't going to hold a lot of weight with some of those groups. And so we need some other good answers. There's a great answer, the human rights issue, and does a group of people have the right to exist? And if there's another group that's saying no, they don't, then any modern person, any person who's concerned about being compassionate and tolerant and all of these words that get thrown around, wouldn't that carry some weight to say you've got one group here that wants to annihilate another group? Wouldn't we consider that horrendous?
Yeah, it's the times that we've grown up in. It always sounds so good to say that when there's a conflict going on between two people or two nations, they're both partly right, they're both partly wrong, if we could just get them to listen, that sounds great. And a lot of times that does work, but there are times when there are irreconcilable differences. Can you imagine somebody going back to the pre-Civil War South and saying, well, you know, the South have their points about slavery too, and the North needed to listen, and there needed to be compromises? We would look at that as nonsense. Now, there are times when something's just wrong. One side is in the wrong, and one side is in the right.
And I think anybody, if they want to be honest, would have to face those things. Now, here's a couple of other things along with that. You know, we're talking about a democracy, a real democracy, and we're talking about really the only solid ally we have in that part of the world. There are other, you know, there are trade things and people, we need oil, and there are people that will, for a while, they'll kind of act like they want to get along. But Israel has been a solid, ironclad ally to the United States.
Yeah, it's like a little mini United States smack in the Middle East. Okay, we'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. As a Christian apologist, I hear scorning and ridicule all the time from Bible skeptics and unbelievers. Some churches will still respond to such people with love and understanding. Others do not.
You Christians are such morons. There's no proof that God exists, and only a pea brain would believe in miracles. Wake up! Step into the 21st century. Besides, Christianity is responsible for most of the world's problems.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Relax, my friends. That's not the kind of response you'll get from Skyline Church. We welcome you just as you are, with all your doubts, all your questions, and all your concerns. Your problems with religion are understandable, and I promise at Skyline you'll experience the love of Jesus Christ, not the revenge of a Sith Lord.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
back to 1170 The Answer. This is Bob Siegel with Jim Barrier.
Now, we went to the break with House of the Rising Sun featuring Eric Burdon, who wasn't singing because it was the great Alan Price doing his organ solo on that song.
So you did better than me. I would have just said The Animals.
That's my strong suit, Bob. When the first time I went to the UK, as we toured the island, every city I would tell my wife, now, this is, okay, this is St. Albans. The zombies are from here. This is Newcastle.
Well, others are pointing out Buckingham Palace and where King Henry VIII lived.
You know? Newcastle, that's where the animals were from, and on and on. And so that's, and Manchester, home of the Hollies. And so that's kind of how I tour the country over there. And I'm guessing the return song was probably from some musical or film.
Actually, I don't know what the piece is called. It was used prominently in Ferris Bueller's Day Off when they went to the museum. Wow. Beautiful piece of music. But yeah. I think the music predates the movie, and that's about all I know about it. Other than that I liked
Ferris,
it.
It does a lot of Ferris Bueller music, I've noticed.
I'm not aware that I've ever used any other than that one. I use a lot from musicals, but. Okay, Jim, that's your challenge. Come back and tell me what other Ferris Bueller I've used, because I don't think I've used any.
Okay. Now, I got a question here. We talked about reasons, just on a secular level, why it would be wise to support an ally that we have in the hot spot of the world. Now, back to the Bible thumpers and the people that are, you know, prophecy, etc. I have this question for you, Bob, and you do mention in your book that you were born Jewish, and yet I think you've treated religions and philosophies fairly. Does God bless or protect Israel even if she isn't following him?
He does, and again, now I am separating this from a reason I would give a person to support Israel. I think we've made that very clear now. Mm-hmm. But in its own right, as a separate subject, where it gets confusing is there are two different covenants God made with Israel. One was conditional, one was unconditional. The conditional one he made with Moses, the unconditional one predated the one he made with Moses. It was the one to Abraham. The one to Moses, God sets up this theocratic nation. He says, if you obey me, I'm going to bless you. If you disobey me, I'm going to curse you. If you obey me, I'm going to give you victory over your enemies. If you disobey me, I'm going to withdraw my restraining hand, and your enemies will conquer you, and you'll be carried off by the Babylonians and people like that. And those things happen. That covenant is no longer in existence. That covenant has been made null and void. That covenant was supposed to end when a new covenant came. The covenant he made with Abraham was different. He told Abraham that because of his faith and obedience, he says, I will bless your descendants regardless of what they do. And so Israel right now, Israel's mostly an agnostic atheist nation. The Orthodox people that are in Israel are very few compared to the other Zionists. And the Orthodox Jews did not believe, interestingly enough, in Israel becoming a nation again because they felt Israel shouldn't become a nation again until the Messiah returned. But God is still blessing Israel on account of Abraham. There was another provision to Abraham's blessing too, though, that's very important for Christians. And that was that he said to Abraham, through your descendants, all the descendants of the world will be blessed. Well, one of his descendants was Jesus. Because of Jesus' death on the cross and resurrection, the Gentiles, everybody can get saved. And now anybody that has the same faith of Abraham is made part of the commonwealth of spiritual Israel. And so Christ will return one day and will deliver Israel. Now, when I say that Israel will be delivered no matter what they do, I mean nationally. Individual Jewish people, individual Israelis, they are still obligated before God to give their lives to Christ like everybody. It's kind of like in World War II. We won the war, so you could say America was saved. But to any family who lost a soldier or a son in battle, they were very aware that there were many individuals that perished in that war. America survived. Individual Jews may perish. Israel as a nation will survive. That is the provision of the unconditional Abrahamic covenant. Because the covenant with Moses is no longer in operation, that has led people to erroneously assume that God's done with Israel, but they're forgetting about the Abrahamic covenant when they say that.
You know, you're so good, you answer my questions before I can ask them.
Well, we aim to please.
And that was, you know, that was one of the things I wanted to bring up is because certain preachers now would kind of lead you to think that Jews are automatically saved. And I think it's because they don't discern between the different covenants that God has made. And so, yeah, every individual has to make an individual choice. They have to make their choice to believe in God, to believe in His Son, and of course, that's controversial in and of itself. So, would you say there is a difference between people that are Jews by birth, they're just born by blood into a Jewish family, and so they're Jewish by birth, but then there are Jews that consider themselves Jews by nationality. They just happen to live over there, and they don't particularly practice any religion, or as you say, they might not even believe or feel.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit of both. To be an Israeli citizen, you do not have to be Jewish. There are Gentiles. There are many Arabs who did not flee Israel when Israel became a nation. Mm-hmm. They live in Israel, and they have more rights in Israel than any Arab in any country. And technically, those Arabs are Israeli, but they're not Jewish. But it's also true that one can be born Jewish and be an atheist or convert to Christianity like I did. Not everybody who is Jewish is necessarily Jewish religiously. They are both a culture and a religion.
Okay. So there's the religious Jew, there's the political Jew, and there are some remaining Orthodox people of the Jewish faith, Judaism, and they still believe in and practice those things to the best of their ability, though there is no temple to offer the sacrifices in, as far as I know. Now I have two friends. These are fascinating people. One of them lives there in your city, and they are Christian people, but they really emphasize the Old Testament and practice. I have a good friend. He goes to synagogue.
Well, yeah, there's a movement that's very popular now called the Hebrew Roots Movement. I did a whole show on that. And whereas I very much defend Israel, and I'm a very much a Zionist where Israel is concerned, I, as a fellow Jew, have had serious problems with the Hebrew Roots Movement. I'll tell you why when we return. Bob Siegel. Buying or selling a home? Feeling overwhelmed? Facing what seems like unlimited choices? Believe me, your first and most important step is to find the right person to represent you and look out for your interests. Somebody who will help you save money while buying or make money for you when you sell. So listen carefully as I offer the best housing advice you're ever going to hear. What you want to do is contact Realty Executives All Area, and you want to ask for my good friend, Fred Falduti. Fred has managed literally hundreds of real estate transactions in the San Diego area and has handled just about any scenario you can imagine. Believe me, folks, you don't want to navigate the landmines of this economy without a skilled and experienced guide. But Fred is so much more. He will look after your interests as if they were his own. Give him a call or contact him online. Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area. 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com.
Is it really true that there will be peace in the Middle East if we just have a two-state solution? Or are some people instead challenging Israel's right to exist at all? Is it true that Jews have no historical claim to the Holy Land and stole that land from a people called the Palestinians? Bob Siegel's latest book challenges the historical revision of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and shows how Israel's struggle may soon be the struggle of the entire world. The Holocaust Against Israel by Bob Siegel, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Okay, Jim, what's this from? And I'll give you a hint. It ain't Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
All the way from your first cigarette. Am I on?
Okay, very good. Okay. West Side Story. Yes. I was afraid you were going to say Ferris Bueller for a minute there. So.
No. But the song that you use in some of your plugs, the Oh Yeah song. They've used.
Oh my goodness, you are right. Okay, that we never use it as.
Oh my.
I was thinking bumper music. We do have a commercial, and yes, that Oh Yeah, it was definitely.
Okay.
All right, Jim, you are right, and I am just, you know, the greater the fault, the greater the man that confesses the fault. And I am going to be a great man right now. You are right, and I am wrong.
Oh, my, and this has been recorded, folks.
It's been recorded. It's been laid down for posterity.
I'm going to take that and make it.
I was thinking only bumper music when you said that. And since that's a commercial, I never even thought about it. Very, very good. However, I'm positive about this. Those are the only two. So I don't know if your statement that I do it a lot still stands. Okay. I play that commercial a lot. We could say that.
Well, maybe that's why it was so embedded in my mind. Okay, well, you know,
I'm glad we got that cleared up, Jim.
You know, are we having fun or what?
We are.
Okay. So now let's see. We're getting all.
Oh well, we were about to talk about the Hebrew Roots movement. Just quickly, it's a very eclectic movement. They don't all believe the same thing. So I'm painting with a broad brush. But the Hebrew Roots movement is a movement that is starting to teach that we are still to obey the law of Moses, not the Abrahamic covenant. They're claiming the Mosaic covenant is still in operation, and some of them, not all of them, some of them do teach that there is a salvation that Jews get just from being Jewish. So I just to say, and just to show my objectivity, because I know I've written a book about Israel, I'm Jewish. I don't take the side of Jews when it's not warranted. Jewish Christians who are involved in the Hebrew Roots movement, I've had serious problems with them. And then of course, your good old regular Orthodox Jew who just doesn't believe in Jesus at all. I've had many a debate with him. So I don't, I have found myself at odds with fellow Jews. There's all kinds of Jews. There's religious Jews, atheist Jews, orange Jews, all kinds of Jews.
Okay. All right. You thought you'd slip that past me, but no. orange Jews. Okay. Hey.
See, I can get away with saying that because I am Jewish. Somebody else made that same joke. We'd call him a racist, an anti-Semite, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I'm offended. So, so there's, you know, there's kind of two extremes there. You have the one saying that, you know, Jews are saved because they're Jews, but Paul clearly didn't teach that in the New Testament. He said it's circumcision of the heart.
Exactly.
Matters.
He did say that God still has a special love for the Jews, that he's not done with the Jews. Your question about is God not done with Israel? Is he going to save them despite themselves? Romans 11 is very clear on that. They're beloved on account of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Those are the patriarchs. However, a Jew and a Gentile must give their life to God. And that's another thing. There's some people in the Hebrew Roots movement that try to discredit the authenticity of the Apostle Paul, even though he wrote half the books of the New Testament, because Paul was the one that developed that reputation of emphatically teaching that we are no longer under the law.
Yeah. And I tend to lean heavily on Paul's writings.
Yes, well, you should. It's the Bible.
Yeah, as you said, half the New Testament, really. And depends on, you know, you always have to say this when you're teaching Bible studies. And the writer of the book of Hebrews says...
That's right. It's commonly ascribed to Paul, but actually we don't know who wrote that.
We don't know.
And one thing we do know, we actually do know that Paul didn't write it because it was a second generation person from an apostle. Yeah. That part was identified.
but it was heavily influenced by his thoughts.
Oh, I would assume so. I would. Yeah. It had the methodology of Paul, the kind of theology that you would expect from Paul. So,
yeah. Could have been one of his disciples.
I think Apollos is actually a good candidate. Apollos was half Jewish, half Greek. It was written in very eloquent Greek, like a sermon. We know that Apollos was a very good preacher, and it had quite a knowledge of Judaism. So,
yeah, he sure did.
He's a good candidate, but the truth is we don't really know who wrote it.
We don't know. Now, one of the things, and I think this was stirred up again when reading the Holocaust against Israel, it occurs to me that there are many people of faiths, particular faiths, that really are illiterate to their own scriptures and their own history. We talk about, we hear the thing all the time about the peace-loving Muslims, and those are, I've met them. I've met people who are call themselves Muslims, and they're peace-loving, and they don't hate, and they don't support the terrorists. But they also probably have no more grasp of the Quran than most church-going Christians who have never read the Bible.
Exactly. Just as there are people that grow up in the church and they don't know the Bible, there are people that grow up in Muslim families and Muslim countries, and they have a high respect for the Quran. And when they tell you that the jihad verses are not in there, they're saying it sincerely, but they do not know or understand their own book.
Yeah, they haven't done their homework. And sadly, that is the case with much of American Christianity. I'm appalled sometimes at how little Christians know about the Bible and how little they've read it. They tend to more, I mean, I'm bad enough reading my Kindle books, but at least I read the words. But the problem we have is that there are Christians who, they hear a preacher, they hear a guy on TV, they hear somebody that claims to be an authority and he's got initials after his name, or before, and so they think, well, he's an expert, he must know, and that's a dangerous way to base the tenets of your faith.
It is. We do get taken in by powerful speakers and charisma, and oftentimes when I hear Christians arguing theology, they think they're quoting the Bible, but they're quoting their pastors, verse taken out of context by their pastors.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my favorite things to ask people is, why do you believe that? And I just keep pushing them out on the limb until it breaks. Give me some substance here. Tell me why. Quote a scripture in context that even supports your notion. But sadly, it's more of an emotional thing, and it's just parroting what they've heard somebody else say all too often. Now, let me ask you this, guy. Now, you have read the Quran. I've only read bits and pieces.
Yes, I have read the Quran.
Yeah. Is it true that Jerusalem is not mentioned in the Quran?
Yeah, that is true, actually. Muhammad's focus was on Arabia and converting the Arabs. The Arabs had turned to monotheism before he came on the scene. And the Jerusalem stuff came later. Well, there's a legend that Muhammad on what the Jews call the Temple Mount, there's a legend that Muhammad from that mount took a trip into heaven. And so Jerusalem has become important to the Muslims, but it is not mentioned in the Quran.
Okay, I'm glad I got that in.
Okay, my friend. Well, always a pleasure having you on. Always a blast having you on.
Have a great time in the Holy Land, sir.
Thank you, my friend. Talk to you later. We'll see you in 2 weeks, everybody.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.